Welcome back, interweb friends. Stop the movie. I want to get out. Hollywood makes bad movies. We make fun of them. And this is a treat. This is a movie that I think has been lingering on the fringes of this podcast for a long time.
Really, since beyond the final frontier.
We've been talking about this movie since before we were doing this podcast. Star Trek V, The Final Frontier.
It was not.
Sadly.
Yeah.
The next one was fine. This one was.
I'll introduce us here because we have a very special guest helping us break down slash tear apart this movie. I'm Alex Dunbar. I'm here, as always, with Jack Estabrook,
Hello.
Cody Wolf,
Hello.
Andy Wolf.
Peace be with you.
What?
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 Peace be
Live long
with
and prosper.
You.
Live long and prosper. That's what I was
saying. Peace be with you.
With you.
Live long and prosper.
I think you just, Andy came straight from church. It's the Lenten season.
Peace be with you. I think that's
Live long and prosper.
I think peace be with you is the tagline for a little bit of heaven. Yeah. Anyway, our friend Nick Newart here to join us.
Hello.
Very exciting to have Nick here. And we're going to jump right into this movie. Star Trek V, it's legendary. I sometimes think this is a movie that's better known by like people's own name for it. Like Star Trek V, the one where they tried to find God. Star Trek V, that terrible one. Star Trek V, the one that William Shatner directed. Like, it has just so many...
Did he direct it?
Yeah, he did.
Yes, he did.
Oh, he did.
Because Nimoy directed...
Three and four,
and he's like, I want to direct one too. So.
Oh, yeah. And that's why he defends it so vehemently.
Pile of crap.
Yeah.
I will say though, this is not my least favorite of the original Star Trek films.
Really?
I agree with Cody on that. I do.
Except we don't agree on what the worst one is.
We'll get to it. I will say, and I'm always nervous because longtime listeners of this show know that oftentimes Andy Wolf is put in the uncomfortable situation of defending movies. On this show, which I know he did
well,
not
we don't
like
put
this
him
one.
Into the
well, he puts himself in that situation.
Wow, I am glad to be here for this one.
Yeah,
no, I didn't like this one.
He didn't like this one.
That's rare.
There were things in this one that I didn't hate, and I may reference that.
I had fun with it.
Yeah, I'm not going to go so far as saying I'm giving a defense to it, but there are some.
It certainly is not a strong. Part of the franchise. It's very installment. Yeah.
Hmm. Let's jump right into this one. This is
if the thing well, the you film fi- opens up.
If the thing you found that you liked was a Who We're All Dancing.
No.
Okay. I was going to say if that was it. Right,
no. You, wait. Till
every
you,
Star okay. Trek
wait.
Fan's fantasy, but 20 years later.
Yeah. Wait till you get my note on that one.
Exactly.
I'll stop right now if that's one of the things you.
I have elaborate notes on that, and they are not good.
Okay. Yeah. Elaborate.
Yeah.
We need to watch that scene again.
Yeah.
One more time.
Well, this is actually. Let's just start it in. I'm going to nerd out here. Is that this is. The only movie of the at least of the original series continuity that structurally plays like an episode in that it has a pre-credit teaser.
I like how Jack is talking like Shatner right now.
Yeah, in you that. Just do a Shatner. This movie has a teaser. Leading up to it.
And this concept was also done on at least one episode of Star Trek.
This is a Star Trek meme, I suppose, is this idea of all-powerful aliens and they're not godlike, but they still have a lot to learn, you know?
I think what Andy's referencing to is, I'm forgetting the name of the episode, but there is an original series episode that's like directly kind of like about false god.
False god.
And that's an unfortunate thing about this episode because it would have been a great 60s original
series episode.
Yeah, it's totally a concept that they would have done, but they let Shatner direct.
It also just feels like this, before we get into the plot, I'll just say, it feels like it's jam-packed with too many things. It was like they wanted to be everything. Like someone said, give us the science fiction of Star Trek 1. Ooh, but give us some ship-to-ship, like, battle. So put a Klingon in there, but give us the drama of Star Trek 3 and the character relationships. Ooh, but we also need the comedy of Star Trek 4. Make sure that's in it. And you kind of threw all of this into a pot.
Star Trek 5.
And while you're at it, here's $50 for your budget.
Yes.
Go nuts!
Yeah.
Here's your $50 for your
that
special
is true.
Effects
clearly,
budget.
Yeah. Clearly, this is the cheapest of the original series.
Oh, my
series
God. Yeah, I mean, the ship...
And they usually had top-notch special effects in those films. In fact, the animatronic whales in Star Trek 4 literally was made 2 years before, got Oscar nomination.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, right. And PETA was concerned.
They thought they were real whales.
They were getting for filming, thinking they were real whales and endangering them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the thing, like the special effects in this, the ship.
It looks
better,
terrible.
It looked better in the freaking 60s show than it did on. This made in what year was it?
88.
It was made in 88, came out in 89. Right. Yeah. Well, I might get this wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong, Cody, but like I believe the special effects company who did all the effects.
Industrial Light and Velveeta. Well, it was because ILM was busy with better movies.
They went to some company.
No, that was too early.
Crusade and Ghostbusters 2, I believe.
Oh, okay, there you go.
I'm trying to remember if it was that one. There was one in the book I was reading. Where Shatner was saying that they went to these guys to do the effects. I can't remember if it was this one or not.
I think if I understand...
And they were so terrible that they had to go to someone else to do them or have them redo them or something.
If I understand it right, like the company that did the bulk of the effects of this movie had never done a major movie before and has never done a major movie since. Like they do commercials or something? They were kind of like a startup, but like were so overwhelmed by what this movie was asking them to do, and they just were not able to deliver.
Well, they can't do that much with a big Commodore 64.
It just doesn't handle it. Yeah.
Not enough rendering power.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we got to get into the plot now.
All right, so we'll start off. Okay, starting off with...
I'm out of here. That's
it. Yeah. Gotta go.
Starts off in a desert. This creepy-looking alien is digging holes in the desert.
This creepy-looking alien that looks like the brother of Sloth from the Goonies.
It does.
And that was my first note. Like, this guy looks like the Sloth's brother.
He does. Yeah. Maybe they're from the same planet. Yeah, maybe Sloth is an alien in the Federation, and he went back in time and ended up on Earth somehow.
But it starts off okay with a scene.
Well, it's okay. Like, right, you get this mysterious form rides out of the desert. He gets off his horse. The guy's going to kill him. He says, "Why do you want to kill me? Don't you have enough problems? You have pain." He says, "I don't have pain. What do you know about it?" And then he brainwashes him. And he does this weird mind meld thing. And all of a sudden he's like, "Oh my God, you're the greatest human being ever. What can I do to help you?" And he says, "Well, you can help me find a starship." And he says, "How are we going to get a starship? We're on this dead planet. And he says, "Don't worry, I've got connections." I think the line is, "Are there more of us than you know?" And he takes his hood off. And he's a Vulcan. And the guy realizes it.
They revealed it in such a way.
Oh, you're a Vulcan.
He turns his ear, puts it into the camera.
He turns his ear into the camera.
Yeah. Okay.
And then he starts laughing, which is kind of ominous because Vulcans don't laugh. And then we go into the opening credits.
He seemed awful happy as a Vulcan.
This was actually a problem.
It's not a bad opening for a movie.
But two scenes later, the guy assuming he's a Vulcan is kind of weird because you find out three scenes later that this is a planet that's being developed by a combination of the Federation. Romulans.
So why didn't he think he was a Romulan?
Yeah, I mean, okay, the guy's laughing, he's showing emotion, must be a Romulan. Yeah. But again, that's the least of problems for the movie.
Well, I'm going to pay this movie a couple of compliments. This opening scene is not terrible.
Right, it's not.
And it sounds like a compliment. Well, it's not terrible.
He's right, this is,
in many ways, special effects aside, this is one of the better photographed movies, I think, in the series. Like, this movie actually has... They did some location work.
In the beginning, well,
yeah. It falls apart because the rest of the movie is special effects. It all takes place on fantasy worlds, but the first act, you know, they're on more... They're, on Earth for part of it, all the stuff on Nimbus 3. I agree with Alex on that, is there's a lot of interesting... Yeah. Shots,
which you
and the stuff in Yosemite is gorgeous, and it is one of the very, very few highlights of this movie. Well, and believe me, there aren't many.
And you never think of Star Trek movies with great cinematography and Star Trek movies like you don't normally think of, but there were actually some borderline really great shots in this.
I think the whole sequence with Shatner climbing the mountain is good. That's about it.
Well, shot wise, right?
Well, shot wise, because
until. Spock shows up.
Okay. Wait. Can we talk about the third actor in that scene? Because someone needed to be credited. The wig that the fake rock climber is wearing is insane. I remember actually seeing this movie in the theater. And when you see this movie on a big screen, the wig on the stand-in climber is ridiculous. I mean, it's right out of a costume shop if you're I don't know. Give me a Mike Myers wig. The biggest screen you can see this on, the better. If you like to laugh.
Another thing I did about this scene though was Bones. I love Bones.
Bones was good.
I loved his neckerchief. He's totally dressed up like it's the '80s.
He totally looks like he got his clothes from a JCPenney's or something.
But even it looks like early '80s. This was '89.
Yeah. But there is something here, and I'm gonna nerd out again. There's a callback because Shatner directed it, I got the sense, again, with the pre-credit teaser, I get the sense that there's a lot more, he's trying to connect it more with the original series, which the movies really weren't doing. They kind of, they were part of that universe, but they were kind of doing their own thing. Mm-hmm. Because here, McCoy does something that he did a lot in the show, and in fact, he says a line that he said a few times in the show, if I'm not careful, I'll wind up talking to myself. McCoy would say that all the time in the original series. Yeah. I'll go crazy on the ship. I'll end up talking to myself, and he's all alone.
I'm going to get my compliments out of the way early on, because I will also say...
They will decrease.
This is one of the few Star Trek movies where I felt like Dr. McCoy actually had something to do in a movie. Because normally he's just sort of like, there.
Yeah. But... Even in 3, when he's a major part of the plot, it's just...
By the third act, he's just watching the action.
He's just watching... This is one of the only movies where you're like, oh yeah, he's like a legit actor
and story.
Actually, probably my favorite scene in this is McCoy. It's a McCoy-centric one later on.
Oh, I know which one you're going to say. Yeah, it's actually a very good scene in a terrible movie.
It has no business being there almost.
Yeah.
But one other thing. The credits. I noticed watching this because I watched way too many in the past month of the Star Trek movies.
There's no such thing as way too many Star Trek movies, Nick.
When you get to 5 twice in 6 weeks, and some of the Next Generation ones.
Yeah, we should revisit.
There's
one
a couple
of those.
Episodes there.
Yeah.
Walter Koenig gets billing over Nichelle Nichols and George Takei.
Was he even in this movie?
How is that
He's
possible?
He's actually said he was only there for 8 days.
Really? Because now that I think about it, he was in the beginning. No, and I remember.
And the rest of it, he's talking to a screen.
And George Takei gets an even short. George Takei is barely in this.
But he still has more to do than Walter Koenig
does.
He at least gets to crash a shuttlecraft.
That's true.
And then he disappears.
Well, it's like with Scotty. Like, there's whole chunks of the movie where have him walk into a beam and knock himself out, and that way we don't have to worry about where he is for the next 40 minutes.
I know this ship like the back of my hand.
Yeah, but it's not like he turned into that either. I guess we'll get to it.
So
Kirk is climbing the mountain, the big mountain at Yosemite, and all of a sudden, and Bones is watching him through some futuristic binoculars, like, oh my God, he's going to get himself killed. Oh my God, this guy's nuts. I'm a nervous wreck, yada, yada, yada. I'm talking to myself. Then all of a sudden, Spock comes out of the blue wearing hover boots, which is technology we have never seen in the Star Trek movie before or since. He has rocket boots on.
Well,
am I right? There's no rocket boots.
They are rocket boots. I think he got them from Raul Julia.
Maybe he did.
And then we're treated to the first of the worst CG effects in this movie.
I don't even think it's CG.
It probably is practical. You're right.
It's green must screen. Have been.
It's green screen work, but
it was
like
the
really,
worst green screen work I've
really
ever
bad.
Seen.
Yeah.
Shatner falls from the mountain.
Yeah.
And then somehow Spock dives after him with the rocket boots on.
On that's a little...
And then the rocket boots are still suspending him, even though the rocket boots are pointing up towards the sky, and Spock is hovering 10 feet off the ground. I don't think you realize the gravity of your situation, Jim.
That's the worst part is when they try... I mean, coming off of Star Trek IV, which, is basically a comedy, like, when you rewatch it, and they're clearly trying to, like, force jokes throughout this movie, and this movie is ill-suited to
the
movie.
Does jump about in the early...
It was great as a comedy. Only
one joke worked in this whole thing, and that's later on. I actually laughed at that one joke.
Wow, I'll be excited to find out what it was.
I thought the stuff between like McCoy and Spock is funny.
Oh, that stuff. That's the best stuff.
It should be, like in the show. Again, that calls back to the show, the relationship that Spock and McCoy had.
Well, and DeForest Kelly is pretty funny. Like, he actually does a good job delivering some of the comedy in this movie. It's when they try to give the comedy, Kirk's comedy is bad. The stuff with Chekhov is not funny. Oh. The stuff with Scotty is not funny.
That Scotty Chekhov point when they're lost is
Scotty
Sulu.
Sulu.
Why didn't they cut that?
I think they had to put him in. Oh, I mean, like, if you take that scene away from, like...
There's no Sulu in the whole movie. Yeah. Virtually.
Well, you see, Sulu's the navigator, and he got lost. Get it?
I know, but still, it was like... Yeah. Oh,
so basically, so everyone's on shore leave. Kirk and Spock are camping out. Scotty, meanwhile, is the only guy who isn't on shore leave, and he's trying to fix the ship that they got in the last scene in Star Trek IV. Kirk is given a new command. Well, now, in this movie, it's like they slapped him in the face by giving him a ship that's not That's a piece of crap.
It's not ready to go.
The doors don't open.
It's like 3 weeks later after four or something.
I guess,
I
yeah.
I mean, they're still trying to get it together.
To get the bugs out of the ship.
Scotty's banging on Hiro now.
Yep.
Horror comes in and they imply
that
romance.
That's
it's heavily implied.
It's creepily implied.
Okay.
Yeah, it's creepily. Well, and at the same time, they're also
space together for so long.
Well, and they're also setting up what's going on back on the planet we first started on, this Nimbus something, Nimbus 3, which was set up as this weird
Paradise
City.
They kind of like a Las. It's sort of like a Las Vegas allegory here,
The story is that for non-Star Trek fans, that there are three major government powers in the galaxy, or at least in the quadrant of the galaxy in which Star Trek takes place. The Klingons, who are this fierce empire of brutal warriors. The Federation, of course, who are the good guys. That's Earth, and all these other aliens have this United Nations of space. And the Romulans, who are kind of this sneaky, seedy, incredibly paranoid. They have their borders closed off. They're not trustworthy. These three races have been at war in like a stalemate, like a Cold War, for like 50 years.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And there's this planet called Nimbus 3 that's just this crappy desert world that just conveniently happens to be located near the borders of the three governments. So the Romulans, the Klingons, and the Federation decided, hey, let's build a city. Let's encourage people to go here, and it'll be the first step in attaining peace, as we have kind of this neutral area where the three governments can meet, and it's no holds barred, no ha-ha-ha-ha-ha. Everyone's free to do as they will, so long as they're not hurting each other. You know, it's kind of this, supposed to be this, the beginning of the future, of coexistence.
Right.
And all the settlers that came to this planet are like the dregs of society. Like they're criminals looking to hide out, or they're smugglers, or they're just nobodies. They're people that the only people that would come to this desert world that has nothing live in this city called Paradise.
And there are three and there are three ambassadors. There's a human ambassador, a Klingon ambassador, and a Romulan.
David
ambassador.
Warner plays the human ambassador.
Well, my note actually for that scene, I'm gonna have to edit it, was just David effing Warner.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, and it's rough because the girl who plays the Romulan ambassador
is terrible.
Is really bad, and I feel bad for her because she's clearly in overhead. Shouldn't have been cast in this movie, and she has to play all of her scenes with the guy who's arguably the best actor in the movie, David Warner, like making it look even worse.
Who I think got his part in Star Trek VI. It was an apology for putting him in this one.
Yeah.
Like we are so sorry about what happened, Mr. Warner.
Yeah.
We'll give you a nice big part next time. Pivotal, please. Just please come back.
Yeah. So, okay. So now, all right, I'm trying to think of where we are. Okay, so they get...
They're in the knockoff cantina.
This movie jumps around a lot. Because while the crew, they're showing us everything that the crew is doing of the Enterprise on their shore leave. Meanwhile, there is this planet, Nimbus 3, as I explained, is this, you know, neutral area.
Right.
Now, the three ambassadors are meeting in this seedy bar, as Nick pointed out, is kind of like a ripoff of the Star Wars cantina.
Because that's where you do all your high-level ambassadorial negotiations.
Right.
Of course.
Let's go get ripped.
There's a three-boobed cat lady dancing on the table.
And a pool table with water in it.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't know what kind of pool that is.
It's a pool table.
Yeah.
So the three ambassadors are meeting. David Warner's kind of macking it to this, the Romulan's a chick, right? Then all of a sudden, the bad guy, the Vulcan bad guy, and his army of
sand people. They're dressed. No, you see the shot as they're storming, and they all look like
sand people.
Extras left over from Star Wars.
And they ride into town, and they kidnap the three ambassadors.
Yeah.
And then it cuts back to the Enterprise, and they receive a distress call.
And the Enterprise gets sent out to...
And they've got to go, and they've got to pick everyone up, which is where we get the joke of Sulu and Chekhov are lost.
Yeah, and they pick everyone up and they start heading towards...
We should talk about the camp scene,
The
though.
Campfire scene.
Oh,
campfire.
Yeah.
Did anybody catch the homoerotica going on there?
No. I didn't get that impression.
That great line from Spock, I guess I gotta lick your...
Dr. Freud will be having a field day with you, Mr. Wolf.
What?
Spock says, I guess I gotta taste your beans then.
I don't think that was meant to be.
They're eating beans.
Come on!
So.
I don't taste your beans. And then
they were talking about the baked beans.
He said, I'm going to sample your beans.
Then McCoy asked Spock, what do we do after the marshmallows?
That's not relevant at all.
What?
All right,
my God.
You're reading way more into this. I did not give that assignment to meaning to it at all.
No, but they're can't they?
No, I thought it was pretty obvious. Go ahead.
Well, like, this is like some of the stuff that I found funny in the movie was between Spock and McCoy in this scene, like where McCoy says, I liked him better before he died. And,
well, here's another compliment. Well, because normally in the Star Trek movies, like, things are just happening, and you never actually get a sense that these people have any kind of a relationship. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, why we're just led to believe, like, oh, they're great friends. Like, well, are they great friends? I don't know.
Would they hang out outside of work?
And this is actually sort of, I think, a nice attempt to kind of show that these people are close and that this is, you know, that there is a bond between them. The row, row, row your boat scene is ridiculous. But the attempt is nice. I thought the attempt was nice.
They had the right intentions. They could have done a little better.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is probably going to be said about this movie a lot.
A lot, yeah. Interesting intentions, they're at a campfire. Questionable execution.
Spock says he wants to toast a marshmallow.
Yeah, melon. Yeah. That was, at first I thought I must have just heard him wrong. And then later they say it again.
The marshmallow. Later, I think they're trying to be funny, but Spock in the series, and even in the movies, is constantly correcting humans about even Earth history. Mm-hmm. So Spock knows a lot about everything. Why would he get marshmallow wrong?
Yeah.
He knows what a melon is, and he knows that this little candy puff is not a melon.
Which, by the way, comes out of the most complicated of marshmallows I've ever seen.
This little robot thing, he presses the button, and it's like it created the marshmallow, like it's a little portable food replicator, I don't know.
Yeah. So, all right, so they get everybody on board, and they're headed out to Nimbus 3, because they're the closest, or
they're the only ship in Starfleet.
No, there's other ships closer, but they wanted
Jim Kirk.
Oh, that's right.
So why didn't they just take another ship then? Hey, Kirk, go on this other ship and kind of like help these guys.
Star Trek, it's got to be the Enterprise. But I do love the implication, basically, and I like to think it was Shatner being the director, like, what this movie needs is a line. Jim Kirk, you're the best there has ever been.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Men want to be you and women want to be with you.
We need you.
Apparently Andy thinks Spock wants to be with you too.
I think so after that. Yeah. No, McCoy. No, Spock, yeah.
Either way.
The one with the ears.
Hey, what happens in Yosemite stays in Yosemite. Yeah.
So they get out there and I'm trying to think of how this, my next note is, maybe we can skip ahead a little bit. Because I'd love for us to talk about the special effects of there's a shot of the shuttlecraft leaving the Enterprise and landing.
Yeah.
It looks like a cartoon.
It's a bad cartoon. It
looks like a cutout.
Yeah. This.
Just.
I mean.
Somebody go across the screen.
If you look at the Buster Crab, like Buck Rogers stuff, like some of that effect looks better. The effects on the 60s TV show, I'm amazed that this shot was even left in. Like, I would have, somehow. It probably would have been better to just not even include this special effect.
Yeah.
Looks like rotoscoped.
It's like a guy dressed in all black carrying a ship across the screen.
It is.
I mean, oh my God.
If you're in the movie at this point, like if someone is enjoying it, they're in the movie, this shot will take you out of the movie instantly. There's no way to stay in the moment
when you watch this shot. Again, Star Trek IV, Oscar-nominated effects, tricked people into thinking that they were really swimming with humpback whales. Yep. The spaceship effects were top-notch. It was the same production company that did Star Wars, that brought ILM in to class it up. This time, no. This is like cardboard cutouts and a fan film, you know?
Oh, it is. Yeah, it's what we would now... I mean, you could right now do on... I'm forgetting the name of it. After Effects. You could right now do a better effect on After Effects in 10 minutes easily than what you're seeing in this, you know... And again, it's from 1988, but still, oof... So their plan is, so the crew, they leave Chekov on the ship, and they come down in the shuttlecraft, and they're going to make, a surprise assault on where...
Paradise City.
Where Cybok has...
Where the grass is green and the girls are pretty.
Yeah, yeah. Where Cybok... Because I believe the Guns N' Roses song is about this movie, right?
There's no grass there, but...
At some point in the movie, I'm thinking, did they name the song after the movie, or the city in the movie after the song?
When you think about that, they were probably shooting this movie in 88. The song might be... The movie was probably in development before the movie, before the song was. So their plan is that they have to sneak up on Paradise City, And we're now getting to something that Andy referenced earlier.
The Homo erotica.
Probably. I'm going to go ahead and say, if you asked geeks, including myself, if you said, what is the low point of geek culture from the past 25 or 30 years, I think people would reference this moment.
Absolutely.
Like the moment we're about to talk about.
Absolutely.
It is... Their big
They can't beam down to the planet, so they use their cardboard shuttlecraft to fly down. They have to land like 6 miles away, or else they get detected. They see a camp with these blue horses. They're like, we've got to get those horses to ride into camp, or else it'll take hours to get there. How are we going to distract the guards?
Oh,
and they show the guards. They're all in their camp, dressed like sand people from Star Trek, huddled around some fire, you know, talking about whatever. And then all of a sudden we hear the lovely, sweet sounds of music. A woman's voice on the wind. A man looks up. Another one stands up. My God, that's a beautiful voice. Is that a woman? Is she naked? And it cuts to Nichelle Nichols, silhouetted by a massive backdrop with the moon on it.
Two big moons.
Naked, dancing with two massive palm leaves covering her naughty bits.
I thought it was like feather fans or something. Is that normally carried on a shuttlecraft?
I don't know. And she's completely naked and she's like, you know, singing her song and she's like all like 60 years old. And these guys are like, oh my God, it's a woman. We haven't seen a woman in years. And they're like clamoring up this hill.
There's a point where you actually hear one of the guys go, oh man. You're like, what?
They crawled up there and saw the size of her thighs and went, oh.
And here's the thing, they all immediately, all of them climb up there. They're like, oh.
And there are like 12 of them. They're like,
oh. Yeah, we got to all go. Like, you know.
Now, why did they even do this? The first scene of the movie, right? The first scene of the movie, that opening teaser, when Slug's brother, or Sloth's brother, thinks that he's got, that this bad guy's coming towards him, he pulls out this makeshift gun with like rocks for bullets.
Yeah.
Then later on, David Warner says, this planet's terrible. We forbid weapons and they still have weapons. They make them themselves. What are you gonna do? This is a violent place, we should give up on it. So now we've got this camp. 12 guys, right? A Federation force of probably equal size. These guys are out in the desert and they've got guns that fire rock pellets. Federation's got phasers.
Yeah.
Phasers, which are energy weapons that can be fired from great distances and can even subdue a force without killing them. Why don't they just go in, stun everybody, take the horses and go? Why even have Nichelle do her little naked dance?
That would have been way too simple and would, you know,
because just... fans were waiting for this moment.
Well, I was reading
it came way too
40 late. Years.
I was reading that the genesis of this was a joke too. They were trying to come up with a way to distract these guys, and a writer said, you know, why don't we have her, you know, do a sexy dance or whatever, and then the producer's like, put it in!
Yeah.
We love it!
Sold!
Meanwhile, while all this is going on, Chekhov's up on the Enterprise, talking with Cybok. The only time he will even come close to commanding a ship, I think.
Yeah.
He's just sitting there, I'm gonna play captain! Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's about to basically be out of this movie after this scene.
It's pretty much his last scene. Yeah.
He's trying to talk like Cybok into like
Cybok
negotiating.
Cybok is the Vulcan terrorist leader, and they're distracting him because he wants a starship. He sends out a distress tape and says, "We demand a Federation starship, or we'll kill the hostages."
Yeah,
they come, and now he's negotiating with Captain Chekhov via view screen. While
awkwardly,
while ancient Captain Kirk and Spock are riding on blue horseback, with going on this adventure.
Right.
And...
Well, let's jump forward a little, because basically they get to... The Enterprise guys get to Paradise City, and they go in, and... Again, this plan... To call this plan half-baked. I mean, so far we've seen this plan has resulted in Uhura doing a striptease and them just, like, busting into this, like, Paradise City with
right
no plan beyond,
nest,
like...
Yeah.
They get off their horses, and everyone's like...
for a captive audience.
Well, they're like, what do we do now? And Captain Kirk's like, I don't know. Shoot some guys.
Well, there's no plan. They get in.
Yeah.
He says... There are Federation forces behind us, close the gate, and the gate's closed, and now they're inside, and there's like 12 of them.
There is one thing you get to see in this scene, though, that was so bad.
Oh,
it was hysterical. Somebody's charging at Spock on a horse.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. What the hell was that?
gives him a Vulcan neck pinch. Horse props.
Gives the horse the neck pinch. Not, that's kind of like that scene in Conan where he punches the camel.
And now, and now the danger's over. The horse is out. The horse is out. The danger's over.
Well, we also, for the second movie in a row, got to see William Shatner open hand punch someone that knocks them out. It's not a punch. I just, there's like, he just sort of like swats him like you would like
Alex Cross.
Yeah, and just the guy just kind of like falls over. He doesn't even get like knocked out, just his body tips over.
And then later on he throws the cat girl at the pool table and she's done.
Spock which knocks
says,
her out.
Spock says, the hostages are behind you, Captain. He's
cats
using his little tricorder.
Water, so.
That's what I thought. I mean,
Kirk says, okay, I'm going to go in alone and rescue the hostages. Okay. So Kirk goes in alone and now it's dark. All of a sudden it's quiet, even though he's fighting outside.
Yeah.
He's in this cantina. And the three-boobed cat lady jumps out and attacks him.
This is another Mo point.
The TV, the futuristic TV turns on with some futuristic car commercial playing. And he fights this cat woman. And then he throws her in the water table. And then the three hostages come out. And he's like, I'm here to rescue you. But then they pull guns out on him. And they say, you know, hand over your weapons.
All right. Now, at this point, why doesn't Sark get, what's his name?
Saramand?
What?
Cybok.
Cybok.
Yeah.
Why doesn't he just take away their pain there and make
them
do... Why is he waiting? Why doesn't he just be like, oh, give me your pain, and then be like, now you're under my control. Give me back your shit.
It's a great question.
Let's just establish this. Cybok brainwashes people by confronting their inner demons and making them feel like their pain has been washed away.
So do it now instead of like trying to... control them.
They had a movie to pad.
You know? I mean, you know.
I agree.
An 80-minute movie.
I mean, no later on he says, it'll be tough, but it's not too tough.
He's got this magical ability to brainwash anyone.
So, do it there.
He doesn't do it.
Then take me to your ship. Take me to God. Boom, you're done.
And it's then revealed that, that Spock knows Cybok. They don't reveal it till a little bit later in the film, but that Cybok is Spock's brother, who he's half-brother, who he's never spoken of, and that they have this intricate backstory.
Yeah.
So the Enterprise crew is captured. They have to go back, you know, and Cybok is like, oh, okay, we're going to go back to the Enterprise. I'm going to take it over. And at this point, luckily, the Klingons, who don't need to be in this movie at all, but are in this movie.
Right.
They don't need to be in it at all, but they're in this movie.
This side story here is ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
And they have abduction technology because they are listening in to everything all the time.
Right.
Anytime anyone is speaking, the Klingons are like, oh, hello there. Let me.
And the Klingon,
they hear it.
He's just a rogue guy who just wants to fight. He wants to shoot something that will shoot back.
Yeah.
If he can get Kirk, he'll be the greatest warrior of all. Because that's how great James T. Kirk is.
Yeah.
He'll be
the greatest warrior of all time.
Yeah.
He strides the galaxy like a colossus.
Right. Yeah.
So that's his plan. He just wants to get Kirk.
Yeah.
And it's so bad because you'd think a Klingon would want to challenge the Enterprise in even combat. To prove his mettle against James Kirk, this young upstart Klingon, you get the impression that he may be some wealthy general's son, was given a ship. He's out there among the cosmos. He's shooting the Voyager probe down. He's bored. He wants to get the great epic Captain Kirk. He wants to engage against the Enterprise in combat. No. What does he do?
He wants to cheap shot him.
He wants to cheap shot him. Exactly.
Yeah.
When
it's
Spock,
a kidney punch.
When Spock and Kirk and Cybok are using the shuttlecraft to get back to the Enterprise, he's like, the Enterprise, I can finally prove my worth in battle. Wait a minute, Kirk's on the shuttlecraft. I just blew up the shuttlecraft.
Well, and that's where the movie's so lazy, because it has to be like, okay, well, wait. Okay, the Klingons could blow up the Enterprise, but they can't. Oh, we got to make sure the Klingons are listening in on everything. Everything.
Yeah,
all channels. All, like, somebody's, like, you know, just talking to someone else in a hallway, and the Klingons are on the phone. You know.
They've got the wiretapping abilities of abduction in this movie.
In the shuttlecraft crash scene, which is like, I knew we were gonna, I'd forgotten.
Plan B is in barricade.
It's in barricade. When I knew earlier, the first time I saw this movie, I remember thinking like, they show you this giant like shuttlecraft bay set.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, they introduce it in the movie in a really random way. And even as like a teenager, I remember being like, that set's gonna come back. There's no way they built that set just for this one scene.
Yeah. Something from the earlier scene that struck me was, it's the 23rd century. When the shuttlecraft lands in that earlier scene, it still takes two guys to come over with a set of stairs so they can get out of the shuttlecraft.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
It does.
Yeah, seats automatically pop out of walls, but not stairs or things like that.
Well, I noticed too earlier than that, the Klingon targeting system is like a grid, like an Atari grid looking thing. Like,
it looked bad even.
Yeah.
Wow. Pretty advanced
they
aren't they?
Borrow someone's Nintendo to power those effects.
Okay, so this crazy scene where the shuttlecraft comes back into this big shuttlecraft bay set they built, looks terrible, like, overlit. It's lit like the freaking Price is Right.
Yeah.
It comes crashing through. They had no contingency plan
this
in place for a crash.
This big net comes up and catches it.
Yeah. Everybody comes spilling out. Everybody's hurt. But the Klingons weren't able to shoot them for what reason?
They got in the ship too fast, or I don't know.
I think what happens is
once they're inside, Chekhov gets his last line of the movie, which is, warp speed now!
And then
the ship speeds away as the Klingon fires, and then the Klingons are like, pah! Oh! And it's like they're
foiled again.
And it's like
gotten away with it if it wasn't. For
and
that
then
network.
It cuts to the shot of everyone spilled out on the deck, and Cybok decides he's gonna fight Kirk.
Kirk goes to grab the weapon first. He gets a
gun. Yep. Yeah.
Right, and then they walk out, and then somehow Kirk grabs a weapon, right, and they start fighting.
Well, they
start fighting. The weapon gets knocked away, and as they're fighting. Spock gets out of the ship and picks it up.
And there's like a great Shatner-esque moment where he's like, Spock, shoot him! You know, like, that just said, only with Shatner delivery, you know.
And Spock won't do it. Spock won't kill him.
Yeah.
And then we find out why.
He won't shoot him, and Shatner's like, shoot him!
Which is something I don't think Kirk would say. Yeah.
Which I liked, actually.
Actually, I don't think Captain Kirk would say that.
Yeah. Yeah, and so
they get captured. But
to move forward a little bit,
that's the only, like I say, the only funny time I laughed was when they were in
the brig.
The brig.
The brig scene.
There's something funny there. I liked about, you know, when McCoy asked me, you know, something about he wanted to beat the hell out of Spock. He's like, can I hold him or something? I don't know. Something was funny. It made me laugh. I kind of like laughed at it.
There's
like,
some funny material. Funny. Like, yeah, I mean, you know, the only actor I can see being okay with this script if they got handed it was DeForest Kelly. Right, I could see him being like, well, okay, like this isn't bad.
Yeah, he had a couple funny lines there. I kind of laughed.
So Cybok's mutant power basically is that he can do this cult leadership thing. Like, that when he does this kind of mind melt thing, that people immediately follow him. So,
and the gimmick is he reconciles people's internal emotional problems.
Yes.
So he gets Sulu and Uhura.
He gets
Uhura. I can't say her name right.
Uhura. Uhura.
He gets them. So again, why didn't he do that on a planet with all of them?
I don't know. And he's gradually taking over, you know, winning everyone in the ship over, but not Kirk, McCoy, and Spock, who are now in the brig. And Scotty, who was wary of this whole situation for reasons that are never explained.
They don't take them coming Scotty on a shuttlecraft for some reason. Scotty's kind of oblivious. He's like, I got to fix the transporter. And he's just
he saw him coming out of the shuttlecraft.
Oh, that's right. He was hiding.
He saw them with the guns. Yes. He's like, he knew something's going on. So that's okay.
So then he breaks them out of the brig.
Yes.
Stand back.
Yeah.
The power of Morse code.
Yes.
With Morse code. And then the booster rockets come back.
Oh yes, they do. They're going to escape. They're going to climb up the turbo shaft. Of course, there's no elevator in it.
After Scotty knocks himself out.
After Scotty knocks himself out, I know the ship like the back of my hand, and he takes three steps and hits a pipe that
it's
he's looking
so
right at.
So hard that he goes down.
And then Sulu runs into the brainwashed Sulu runs into the tube to try to get them. Meanwhile, Kirk and McCoy are climbing up these stairs, this ladder. To try to get to like deck 37 or whatever. And Spock says, oh, and he just leaves.
Spock's like, oh, I know where my boots are.
And he just goes and gets
I left
his
him
boots
on the shuttlecraft.
Where?
Let me go get
everyone on the ship. Everyone on the ship is under Cybok's mind control. Yeah. That includes armed security guards, right?
Yeah.
Spock is known to be a traitor against Cybok. Yeah. So he just walks down the hall,
but
goes to his quarters
time,
and grabs his boots. Yeah.
But then he comes
from
upstairs.
They say at the beginning of the movie, they don't even have like a skeleton crew on the ship.
True.
Yeah.
And from the looks of it, there's just the main cast and like two other people, whoever carried the stairs over.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah, there's barely even any red shirts. Like the guys are like, oh, that dude's in
and
trouble.
Then,
yeah.
I don't know how many people Cybok brought. So big ship, you know, maybe he was able
to I'll buy that.
I love the boots when they're going up. Because they had, you could see the track.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The track
yeah.
was supposed to be part of the tube.
Yeah.
But I was like, so obviously on the track there. Well, I was like, oh,
I
God,
do know one
painful.
Thing about this, and if anybody ever watches this again, you can see why. They just had one level of the tube. So when you watch it now, you can just see they're just shooting the same, like 8-foot stretch just from different angles when they're going up and down.
Different sign. Level 22.
So anyway, they use the booster rockets to get to
the
top of the
and we get the marshmallow callback.
Yeah.
It appears that we're too heavy. Must have been all those marshmallows.
Yeah. Hilarious.
And then he presses the turbo. fire the rockets! Yeah. And he activates the turbo boost, which flies them all the way up to deck 99. I believe we overshot the margin, Captain. Nobody's perfect.
Yeah. And
now all of a sudden they're alone again. Kirk, Spock, McCoy are now alone again, not checked by the bad guys. And again, okay, maybe the ship's barely empty. And they go inside there's this forward lounge. And there's this comm panel, and they communicate with Federation. This is Captain Kirk of the Starship Enterprise. Our ship has been taken over by terrorists. We require your assistance. Our coordinates are such and such. Send assistance. And who is it that responded?
Of course, the Klingons. Who tapped all phones and are talking back in English. Call back in perfect English.
Yep.
Which is, their whole storyline is ridiculous.
Yes. The Klingons were shoved into this movie.
Yeah, this movie is
clinging.
It seems like
the
sensitive message like that to be some code, like,
and
you know, K-977, you know, so you'd be like, I know I'm talking to the Federation, you know.
Yeah.
I do love the way the Klingon storyline eventually ends.
Yeah, I mean,
even my wife groaned at that one.
Yeah.
So you're sorry.
So Cybok then comes in, and we get what I think
is probably the best scene.
Scene in the movie, and this is the scene where I could, like, you can actually get a hint of, like, oh, this is an interesting idea for a film.
Of course,
like,
they didn't explore it.
No, not really, and like that, so much else is flawed. But where Cybok takes, you know, Spock and then Dr. McCoy, and he's gonna, you know, go into their pain and, like...
Well, first of all, Spock's pain.
We actually show it. In this case, they actually show it.
Pretty lame.
Yeah.
Seconds after I was born, my father said I seemed awful human.
Yeah. Well, the great thing, too, is
it ties into... I actually kind of like that, because it ties into the fact that from the original series, Spock and his father don't like each other.
Right. Yeah. But one of my problems is, this is literally
seconds after he was born. Yep.
Yeah.
Plus, McCoy took him a while to work him, and Spock, who supposedly has no emotion, should take a while to crack him, like that. Shows him one thing, he's like, oh,
yeah,
you're right.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah. McCoy's was probably the best one.
Yes, that was...
But again, why were they all seeing it?
I don't know. Cybok's mutant power seems to be very vaguely defined.
Yeah, like, it's awesome they're all seeing it.
We don't even know if they actually do all see it. It just kind of shows...
No, because... Kirk walks over to Spock and says, what is this?
Yeah.
He says, I believe we're seeing when I was born.
Yeah. It's...
And then Spock turns...
The movie is not following its own internal logic.
No, it's not.
No, it is not. Yeah.
McCoy's pain is interesting in that he had to kill his father... He basically euthanizes his father, and then a week later, the cure for the disease his father was dying from was put on the market.
Yeah.
And that was actually a very powerful scene, if there's any in this movie.
This
that's
the best
the only
scene DeForest Kelly gets out of all the
out of
Trek
any
movies.
Star Trek ever.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole series. Yeah. Yeah.
Including the television show.
Yeah. Yeah. So this all goes on, but then at the end,
Kirk says,
no,
you're not going to work your voodoo magic on me.
I did like that.
Spock's too powerful for Cybok. Yeah. Because Jim Kirk
is undominable.
The greatest man in the galaxy.
He's indomitable.
I did like his little speech here, because it kind of was reminiscent of Star Trek episodes.
Yes, I need my pain to move on. That's true.
Kind of, I like that. It's a little reminiscent of it.
For me, this whole
assuming
scene,
his pain is what? The death of his son, I would imagine.
Probably. Well, yeah, probably.
Yeah, I guess the whole scene did work.
This scene shows the potential of this movie, and then now we're about to fall off the rails. Now we're really
pretty much right here. When they walk out of the room, it falls off the rails.
Yeah, things
because now
they're going to
Cybok reveals that his quest is to go beyond the Great Barrier and get to this planet Shakari, which is supposedly
God
where God is. God has been speaking to him and telling him, and he needed a starship to get across the Great Barrier into Shakari.
The Great Barrier being a radioactive field at the center of the galaxy.
And then he just puts Kirk back in command of the ship.
Yeah, after
they go through the barrier.
They go through a giant ink blot.
This thing is like, I love how...
Don't be afraid of the ink blot.
Yeah. How dramatic it is, like, no one's ever gotten through the Great Barrier, and it's... And then, like, they go, like, 5 seconds it takes them to get through the barrier.
I don't believe it's real.
Okay, like, hey, we're through. We're through.
Yeah.
And not only do they get through, the Klingons manage
to go through as well.
Yeah, sure, I'll go too.
It's like, yeah, okay.
Why
not?
It's not that great of a barrier then, is it?
Yeah. And then there's actually, and you're right. So, okay, so they go through the Great Barrier, and Cybok's like, all right, Captain Kirk, the ship is yours again. And now Kirk is basically like, well,
Better be
as long as we're here, I know, like, kidnappers. Like, well, I mean, we are here.
Let's beam down the planet.
These guys did point guns at us and threatened to kill us all, but we're here.
We're going to follow Federation protocol and just do what you want.
Yeah.
We're going to beam down to the planet. Of course, it's going to be myself, Spock, and Dr. McCoy.
But they don't beam down.
They can't beam down yet.
This movie maximized. They built a full-size shuttlecraft.
Oh, that's right.
And you can just tell that Paramount was like, we are getting our money out of that shuttlecraft. That shuttlecraft better get a lot of airtime.
They got more airtime than this than I think the entire series.
Yeah. This is like the shuttlecraft movie.
Got more airtime than Chekhov did.
Yeah, that's right. Even to the point where... Like, moments later, the crew are watching, like, Spock, McCoy, Kirk, and Cybok go down to this planet, with the Shakari planet, and the crew are watching on a video feed.
There's a weird shot.
A video feed where you see the shuttlecraft land in the video feed, and I'm like, how have you seen that?
That episode where he fights the Gorn.
But yeah. they even have a shot when they're all watching on the monitors of the shuttle bay. And a guy standing there looking, I don't know what the hell the shot even was. It's like, then they show the shuttle bay and the shuttle, and it's like, what is this, the weird place shot where, like you said, trying to show off the shuttle bay, I guess.
I guess, yeah.
But so you land on the planet, and it's basically Nevada.
Yeah, it's a desert.
It's pretty much Nevada.
And they're looking at it like, this is amazing.
Everybody's like, wow.
It's a desert.
It's Nevada.
Can we also talk about, there's
heaven?
At that point, I'm like, you know what?
You're wrong. This isn't heaven. We're out of here. You know,
heaven isn't a desert.
And let's talk about there's a bit of foreshadowing here, which had me laugh out loud. This is my second time watching it. I'm like, how does this movie end? I can't remember. And then there's a scene where Uhura's like, Scotty, you got to come see this amazing video feed. He's like, I got to fix the transporter. And I'm like, okay, okay, so the transporter's about to factor into this. Okay, all right, thanks.
And then we get the best line of the whole movie, or one of the best lines of the whole movie, when Kirk lands on the planet and they're all staring at the desert. Captain Kirk literally pops out his communicator and he says, Enterprise, this is Kirk. We have
right,
and then he looks over at Dr. McCoy, who just kind of shrugs, and then that's it.
and that's the line.
Yeah.
And you know what's funny is I was watching this with
far in the script,
with my daughter who's 12, and she's kind of like, what? She was like confused, like what? He didn't finish. What did they have? I'm like, I don't know.
I'm guessing this is a real world thing where he's like. We ran out of script.
And that's the end of the script. Movie over.
We have budgetary concerns.
That's
a wrap.
They couldn't pay Shatner enough.
So all the ribs come out of the ground.
Come out of the ground.
This is again.
And everything goes out of the
ground. Dinosaur fossil comes up.
They would have been better off not showing them coming up. Because the end result, the set that results in the end is not terrible. But it looks worse because you're seeing them pop out of the ground. You're like, oh, don't show me how that was made.
Now, that was a setup for something that never got used in the film, though.
Right.
There was something they were going to do that they never did. The rocks coming out of the ground was supposed to be a lead-in to that.
Yeah.
When they decided against it and rewrote the ending, they kept the set, probably for expense.
Yeah. So they get to this thing and...
A big blue cloud appears.
A big blue cloud who's like, you know, looks like... They kind of do an interesting thing here of like, oh, this is what you expect. You know, he's
God
appearing to them.
They show different sort of gods from different alien planets.
They show him as a bearded man.
This is what you would be comfortable with. And fake...
even then, it's sadly cliched. Oh, yeah.
It's just the white beard and the long hair and the benevolent voice.
Yeah.
And now, for some strange reason, now, of course, Cybok is into this. He's, like, crying. He's like, my God, it's you, finally, I've made it, I've done this, right? Spock is a little bit, like, fascinating. Kirk is like, I ain't buying this. But for some reason, Dr. McCoy, how many episodes of the series, the original series, the animated series, the four previous films, how much weird alien crap have these guys seen? And how many of these aliens claim to be gods? And then at the end of the episode, they're proven wrong.
Yeah.
Dr. McCoy all of a sudden buys this. This is God.
He's still under the
Yeah, but even without the mind control.
What I love is, in this scene, even with all the aliens they've encountered, this is some alien that from light years away has been able to contact Cybok. You know, I'm assuming give him this power that he has to, convert people.
Yeah.
And Jim Kirk, not a doubt in his mind, just thinking, well, this could be God. I'm going to be a jerk to this guy anyway.
So. Yeah, of course.
Well, and also, the well, fake the fake yeah, god...
It is probably his best line. Like,
wait a minute. Why do you need a starship? I mean, you know, if your god answers me, right?
Because there's, there's this interesting...
He wants out of this movie. That's why.
There's an interesting dialogue where the god character says, I need a starship, and Cybok says, yes, you will have it. It will be a chariot. And he says, excellent. Now, how big is the starship? He starts asking questions about it.
Well, that's the problem. His fake god wants some, you know, fake god's got to ease up a little bit there.
But then he says, well, who are
and
you?
McCoy and Mike Kirk says, and Kirk says, excuse me, I have a question.
You should know who I am.
What do you need with, what does God need with a starship? And he says, who are you? And he says, if you're God, you'd know. And then McCoy's like, don't get God angry. And it's like, you're not, why are you buying this, Bones?
Well, then you get the line. Why is God angry?
Yeah.
Which just every time I see that laugh.
Yeah.
Why is God angry?
Yeah, because he's being a jackass. He gets shocked by lightning. If you need proof I'm God, I'll strike you with lightning. Because it was the 80s. Yeah. So of course you need blue cartoon lightning to fly out of the fingers of the eyes of the villain. Which seemed to happen a lot in 80s sci-fi and fantasy films. If you think about
it. Was like the Goza the Gazarian of the late 80s.
Emperor Palpatine.
Oh, yeah.
We got this a lot. In Highlander, there was lots of blue lightning. There's blue lightning in a lot of 80s fantasy movies.
Yeah.
And, of course, Star Trek V is no different.
So in the end, so Cybok then realizes, oh, this is a fake god. This is something, you know, this isn't right. And he sacrifices himself, like, basically, like, throws himself into this fake alien god
to let the others escape
to buy some time for the others, and the others are like, oh, we gotta get out of here, you know, gotta go. And they're
now,
going
is at this point where the mind control wears off, because they don't really ever say that the mind control ever wore off. Like Chekhov and Scotty and Uhura and the three ambassadors, I mean, they're all fine at the end of the movie.
Yeah, I guess once they kill it, I don't know.
I guess that's a great...
Shockingly, they just dropped the ball.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Who saw that?
It's never really covered.
Well, they get the Enterprise to fire a...
No, what happens is Kirk's
torpedo.
Trying to escape.
No, they fired a torpedo at...
No, well, first...
Cybok and...
Oh, right.
They fire a torpedo and then boom.
And then Kirk jumps from the explosion.
Right. And then they're trying to get away in the shuttle.
Then Kirk gets left behind, and this is in the original movie, he was going to fight a rock monster. The god energy was going to, it was going to go into the rocks.
He was
going to
fight like six of them.
And come out as like six rock monsters. 55-year-old William Shatner is going to be like,
fist fighting
giant rock monsters.
And when you look at the footage, it's on the Blu-ray of the one rock monster costume they made. It doesn't look terrible.
It doesn't look too bad. No.
It really doesn't look
that
bad.
The love child of the Gorn from the original series and the Thing from Marvel Comics. But,
It
still, it looked pretty good compared to all the other effects.
I suppose it did.
Yeah, I'm actually impressed that he had the guts to cut it, because clearly a lot of money went into it.
Oh, got it.
You know, and for him to have the guts to be like, oh, this is going to look bad. You know, that's...
He was remembering the Christopher Lloyd fight.
Oh boy. So he gets beamed up. Okay, so...
What happens is he's running from the god creature. Yeah. McCoy, he throws McCoy and Spock. They, like, beam up. He's only got enough energy to beam up two people. As always in the original series, both Spock and McCoy are arguing amongst themselves as to who gets to be left behind. Kirk says, nope, you're both going. Okay, they beam off.
Yeah.
McCoy hates being beamed up. No, wait, just a damn minute. And he disappears. And then Kirk is left alone to fend for himself against the massive blue cloud, which is screaming like a seal being tortured. It's going, woo! He's making this weird noise. He's firing his blue lightning at Kirk, and then all of a sudden a Klingon ship flies up and kills the cloud.
Yeah.
And then it's standing there and it points its gun at Kirk. And Kirk says, all right, fine, kill me.
It's a very fake looking gun, by the way.
He's like, kill me, Klingon bastards, to the giant ship.
Looked like a model I made when
not,
I was 12.
Not a good, it looked, this definitely looks like an insert shot that was like shot in post-production, and it looks terrible.
And he's beamed on to the Klingon ship.
And because
he's taken to the Klingon commander by armed guards.
Yeah, and then there was this whole thing of like the Klingon ambassador to Nimbus 6 calls the Klingon warrior pilot, who's like, no, don't shoot down the Enterprise, help the Enterprise, and everything.
Because he's a commander, he's a higher rank
general or something.
Yeah, I mean, it's really.
Because the Klingons just wanted Kirk.
And then Kirk
we'll let
goes,
you go, give me Kirk.
Kirk goes onto the bridge of the Klingon ship, and he sees Spock is the one who's what sitting on the bridge of the Klingon ship. And
he's the one that actually shot the...
He's the one that shot the alien,
which,
I guess.
In a much better movie that put any thought into it, could have had a fun, you know, science versus religion kind of thing.
You could have.
Yeah.
And that would be very Star Trek, wouldn't it? That would be very Star Trek.
Shoot him with a big gun. You know, yeah.
We could have just had the Klingon guy shoot him, but no, it's got to be...
That's the kind of ending you want in a Star Trek movie, you know?
He wanted to fight a ship, but he's just going to beam Kirk up and be like, okay, thanks a lot, guys. I mean, how was that? His motivation was totally...
Well, he had the general, who was the ambassador, just kind of saying no.
Well, I know, but I'm saying his motivation was to fight a starship and defeat Kirk. Well, if he just beams Kirk up from the planet, well, that's totally goes against what he wanted to do.
Yeah. Well, by that point, it wasn't his decision. He's already been usurped. The commander is now in charge.
No, I know. I'm saying he wanted to beam him up. He said, give me Kirk and I'll let the Enterprise go.
Oh, like, well, you're right. I forgot
what good
that.
Is that to you? You wanted to fight Kirk, not just beam him up and be like...
They would have killed him on that.
I'm telling you, the whole Klingon subplot in this movie is madness.
I got the sense that they thought this would be the last Star Trek movie with the original series cast. Half the movie was shot on redressed Next Generation sets.
Yep, you can definitely tell.
And you
in
can
some
tell
of that.
In some shots. Also, they called the film The Final Frontier. Even though Shatner directed it, you could see that he was trying to give each cast member at least one scene. And he decided, oh crap, because Kirk hates the Klingons so much, there needs to be at least one scene where he finds peace with the Klingons. Let's just get it out of the way so that, because we're never doing these again.
Awkward forced apology ever.
Here we go.
Tell him, I am sorry.
I apologize.
And then Kirk goes to hug Spock for saving his life, and Spock says, please, Jim, not in front of the Klingons.
Yeah.
And then they throw a party.
They throw a party. And this is where I realized that
where Chekhov and Sulu are walking shoulder by shoulder.
Following
the Klingon woman who's like 20 feet tall. Well, not that tall, but she's like a foot taller than either of them. And they're like looking at her butt and they're like, she's hot. And then she turns around and they both like turn around and walk away like they're one life form, like they're connected at the hip. It was pretty creepy.
At the beginning of the movie, the two of them together, especially in the light of George Takei having come out, in the past decade, I couldn't help but see that scene and think, Chekhov and Sulu, arguing couple.
Why not?
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
It's Star Trek. It's about acceptance.
Exactly.
Tolerance in the future.
We also realize that the Romulan ambassador, who is... like,
horrible
in the beginning. She never speaks again. She even has scenes at the end of the movie, and you can almost tell purposely, like, they do not have her speak.
Where I think it's heavily implied that David Warner is an intergalactic pimp.
He was a Mackinac. He
finally shows up again somewhere. I don't even know why. There must have been more to that character, along with other characters that just,
that hit the cutting room floor?
Well, and then there's a fantastic Shatner line that basically like sums this movie up, because they're kind of talking about this whole idea of like religion and like
they
God
gloss
and
over
all this
it
stuff.
Instead of making it the point of the
And
film.
You get this Shatner line where he's like, Bones, maybe he's not out there. Maybe he's here. The human heart. And I'm like, I'm like groaning. I'm like, oh no. Like even as it's going on, I'm like, don't. Oh no.
Well, the original line was, maybe he's right here. Yeah. William Shatner.
Maybe it is me.
I bet that was.
And then we end it with row, row, row your boat.
A terrible decision. A terrible, terrible decision. I mean,
let's go camping again.
Actually, we didn't even touch on that earlier when we were talking about
that. Earlier when they're camping, they toast the marshmallow and they sing row, row, row your boat, and Spock doesn't get it. And they're like, Spock, you'll never get it. And then at the end of the movie, they sing row, row, row your boat.
He's playing
together.
A sitar.
Yeah.
Spock's playing his weird little sitar thing that he has in the original show, his little lute, his Vulcan instrument.
It would have been better if, like, all of a sudden, like, Dr. McCoy busted out, like, a didgeridoo or something. You know, something wild. I would have been like, wow, all right.
That's the end. And then we hear the sweeping... I'll give them... This is the last compliment I'll give this movie, is they brought Jerry Goldsmith back, and he made beautiful music. Phenomenal score for this film.
That, I felt, the music for the last couple just wasn't anywhere near, the Jerry Goldsmith score from the motion picture.
Yeah.
Was actually what I think is the best thing about the motion picture.
Of course. In this movie, it still works, though. I thought it'd be great.
For several movies,
this.
No Jerry Goldsmith, but from the beginning of this, you could just tell, and when his name popped up in the credits, I was like, okay. Not surprised. I'm glad he came back. Unfortunately,
it's a bad movie.
Movie.
But they finally decided to class it. Maybe they figured the movie was so bad that they had to say, what's the best part about Star Trek? Oh, it's that Jerry Goldsmith music.
Yeah.
They wanted to use the theme from Next Generation because it was big at that point. They used the Goldsmith theme from the first movie as the theme for Next Generation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And that there it is. That is Star Trek V. The good, the bad, and the ugly. Let's jump right to... Well, any final thoughts anyone wanted to make on this one?
I did find a quote from Shatner talking about the movie.
Oh, no.
That, since he directed, Star Trek V is the epitome of my career, my experiences, my hopes, and dreams. It is the quintessential me. You really want to make that confession, Bill?
Yeah, I would. Well, I mean, I think that... I watched some of the behind-the-scenes stuff, and I think what William Shatner really should emphasize more is, like, this movie was really undercut by Paramount. They were cutting the budget. They were cutting the budget while they were in production.
Which makes no sense, because Star Trek was at its peak. Next Gen was succeeding on TV.
That's normally how they do
it, though. Star Trek 4 was probably the highest box office gross of any Star Trek movie.
But you always hear stories about companies doing that. You make a big one. They cut the budget.
That's true.
Like, I've never worked for a company that's cut budgets.
No, yeah. No,
certainly not. Yeah. Three times.
Not here. That's not
right.
Me either.
That's right. I would have
inside baseball.
I mean, yeah, I would have been very interested to see. I don't know if it would have been good, and there's a lot of like problems still inherent. I wonder if without all of the budget cuts, schedule cuts, and all of that, if there was. If he had been left alone, and it's pretty clear from the behind-the-scenes stuff that Paramount was also, at every turn, pushing them to work up the comedy, because they had had that before. And you wonder if somewhere in there was a really good movie that just had, like, a death of a thousand cuts, you know, of all these things.
And it also got hit with the late 80s writer's strike, I believe.
It did.
I think you're right. So I think you're right on that, too.
You know, if they had, like, another year,
it
probably could have been a much better movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then we wouldn't have gotten Star Trek VI.
Well, we would have gotten it a year later.
Or maybe we would have. Maybe we would have.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that they made six after this anyways, so I'm sure they would have made six a year or two later.
That's true.
Yeah. So here's our So Wrong It's Right question. This is from the behind-the-scenes materials on the Blu-ray. There is a fantastic press conference in its entirety on the Blu-ray from 1988. Paramount brought a whole bunch of journalists onto the Paramount lot and onto the bridge set and did this whole weird presentation where Shatner took questions from the journalists.
Was it just Shatner?
It was just Shatner, and then they open up the curtains, and it's the whole classic main cast, and they're in their spots on the bridge, and it's to kind of like pump up, like, hype the movie while they were shooting it.
Yep.
And Shatner introduces everyone on the set. And this is on the Blu-ray. Highly recommend everyone watch this. He's introducing everyone, and as he's introducing them in front of, like, stands of journalists. There's like dozens of people there. It's pretty clear he forgets one of the people's names. And as he's introducing him, or this person, he does not remember their name. And it's abundantly clear that he just does not know this person's name and has to just move on. So our So Wrong It's Right question is... It's a main cast member?
I got one in mind.
I'm going to give you four options. Okay, I'm going to narrow it down to four. It was either James Doohan, who played Scotty, George Takei, who played Sulu, Nichelle Nichols, who played Uhura, or Walter Koenig, who played Chekhov. And one of those four people...
You said the one I was thinking in my head, so...
One of those four people, and I recommend everyone go back and watch it. It's hilarious.
I'm going to say Walter, because that popped in my head.
Okay.
I'm going with Koenig, too.
Okay. I think everyone knows that George Takei and William Shatner don't get along, but I think what people don't realize is actually Shatner and Doohan don't like each other.
Okay.
And I got the late James Doohan, I got the sense that they did not like each other on set. They didn't get along. They're not in a lot of scenes together. My guess is James Doohan.
Okay. Walter
My guess is Walter Koenig. No. James Doohan. I'm saying
the
James
writers forgot about him, obviously.
Because I get the sense that they're not friends outside of Star Trek.
Yeah, well, I'm actually going to go with Doohan also.
Okay. All right.
As much as I want to say Koenig, Doohan.
All right. So it's two for James Doohan, two for Walter. I will describe to you how it goes down. Shatner comes out. He first introduces Leonard Nimoy and DeForest Kelly.
Of course.
He then goes up to, and he's like, George Takei, who plays Sulu, who clearly, Takei in this press conference, thinks he's going to be allowed to talk, isn't allowed to talk. Shatner immediately pulls the microphone away from him, then walks over. I think he does Nichelle Nichols next, and then goes, and this is... the actor who plays Chekhov.
Yes!
And they just have to put the mic up there, and then it just goes on. It's crazy. It's crazy.
The wolf boys win again.
Yeah, yes.
I would have thought it would have been
going. Can I just say that?
Yeah, go ahead
and
say it.
That we met Walter Koenig, and I don't blame Shatner for that.
I don't blame him a bit. The guy's a D.
He's kind of a douchebag.
Wow. Yeah. So that, yeah.
Wow, that's saying something.
It's a great moment.
Well, I guess Koenig was the new, by this point he wasn't, but Koenig was.
He'd known him for 20 years.
I know.
Koenig was brought on the set. You know what? I saw an episode of Columbo where Koenig and Shatner were in the episode together.
Yeah.
So you would get the sense that Shatner got him the job.
They had made 5 movies together and been on a TV show together for and the animated. I mean, they worked together for 20 years, and Shatner is like totally blanking on his name.
Wow, William Shatner.
So, and to wrap this up, as I think you have to do anytime you talk about a Star Trek film, the original ones, you have to like rank them because they're so all over the map in terms of quality. Yeah. So you have to kind of. So I would be curious to hear everyone's preference on the order of the Star Trek films. The classic six. And I would say, first off, can we all agree that 2 is the best one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So we can skip that. Yeah. So two is the best one.
Yes.
But I'd love to hear people's thoughts on now, like in decreasing order, like how you go after 2. I'll give mine first. For me, it goes 2. My next one is 6. I would go with 1 after that, so 2, 6, 1, and at this point, it gets really close for me. Like, I'm not going to disagree with anyone how they rank these. I go 2, 6, 1, and then 3, 4, 5, and 3, 4, and 5 are all kind of rough for me.
You have 4 of that far down, really?
4, I watched it recently. It doesn't hold up.
I thought it held up.
I watched it when I was a kid, and I loved it.
I would say that mine would be 2, 4, 6, probably 5, 1, 3.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
3 I hate.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you hate.
Yeah.
1. I'm surprised 5 wasn't at least second to last on that.
Well,
one.
My only problem with 1 is it feels too much like like 2001. It doesn't feel like a Star Trek movie as much as 5
does. There are definitely
5
points where it drags.
Yeah. Well, it really drags 1.
It's kind of the shooting. It just doesn't feel
especially
much
they,
like a
when
Star
when they introduce
Trek
the Enterprise in 1.
That
one.
One's like
that scene is ridiculous. Yeah. Yeah. I appreciated 1 more when I got to watch it on Blu-ray and on a big screen TV, and I was like, okay, like I kind of get what they were going, but it drags.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's way too long and needs to be cut. Like you could cut 45 minutes from that movie and you wouldn't miss a thing.
Yeah.
But it's, yeah, I don't, I, yeah, I just, for me, 4 was, and I loved 4 when I was a kid. I loved it. And I just went back and watched it. I'm like, ooh, like, it's too jokey. Like, for me, sometimes, like, I like that it's funny, but, like, it's, like, jokey jokes. Like, at times, like, it's flat out sitcom.
I thought it was a good palate cleanser after, like, 2 and 3 work well together. And the 4th one, you know, finishing off that trilogy, it just kind of, 2 and 3 just gets so serious.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it was just okay. We need to, you know, get that taste out. Let's do something a little lighter. And I mean, it is almost a straight comedy. It is definitely the least Star Trek like.
Yeah,
the original.
Right. The only thing I had, only problem I had with 4 was it was a lot less space stuff. Obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Earth back in time type of thing.
Film,
yeah.
Yeah.
Which I generally I don't care what the message is. I'm usually just like.
But Star Trek is always kind of about a message,
I agree with Nick, though. It's a little preachy. Like, watching it now as an adult, I'm like, ooh, I'm like, ease up, Greenpeace, you know? Like,
I'm not saying it's not an important message. I generally agree with the message. It was just heavy-handed.
When they overdo it sucks. Yeah. I understand. Yeah. I gotcha.
Yeah. So, Andy, what would yours be? What's yours?
Oh, God.
It would be 2, 4...
So you haven't seen 6,
I haven't
seen
6 in a long time.
Okay, so...
I saw it once.
I can borrow it. I haven't.
And I was like, it's 2, 4. What's the other ones?
1. It goes
1.
Then 2, 4, 6.
3, 4, 5.
It's
generally 5 follows 4.
Yeah,
it's actually...
We mostly use
2, 4, 6.
The numerals. You know,
each movie does have its own title.
Yeah, traditional numbers.
It'd be even. 2, 4, 6, I think.
Well, that's always the line.
Because 1, 2, 4, 6, 1.
You're just saying what I said, aren't you?
5, 3. Is that what you said?
No, okay, I said, so you have, I said 5-1-3.
So. Okay, so you have three. You have three worst.
I hate three.
Three was a rough watch for me.
I don't. I tell you the truth. I can't remember what it was about. They found Spock, and it was over.
Well, they work in. That's another one where they're working in a Klingon subplot that's like awkward.
Yeah. I didn't care for that one at all.
And Doc Brown.
Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah, Christopher Lloyd. Yeah.
Then I know that,
the fight been better as Doc Brown in that, or his character from Taxi. That would have been hysterical.
Yeah.
Oh, you want my list?
All right, ready?
No, we don't want Jack. Yeah.
Mine's going to be controversial. Oh, here we go.
Oh.
Mine's going to be controversial. Right away, 2-3.
Oh.
Because I like 3 second best only because if you watch it on its own, it's not great. But if you watch 2 and 3 like in one sitting... 3 is actually a lot better than I think a lot of people give it credit for. Okay, the action is slightly downplayed. It's a little bit of a far-fetched plot even for Star Trek. But still, I thought that it had some touching moments. Mm. I thought that it worked. And I thought the Klingons were great. The end fight scene is lame.
The fight scene between Christopher Lloyd and Christopher Shatner.
But the characters, the Klingon characters themselves are really cool. And I like those villains. So I say 2, 3, 6, 4... 5-1.
Oh, you've won last.
One last, and only because. Now, again, 5 sucks, but 5 at least feels like Star Trek. 1, beautiful special effects, cinematography, sweeping score, but it's almost 3 hours long. Nothing happens in it.
Nothing. Yeah.
And it was a rehash of a plot from the 1960s called The Changeling, and that episode was phenomenally better.
Yeah, much better.
Yeah.
It fails because they were trying to make it 2001, and even though it's a superior film in terms of substance compared to 5, 5 has the adventure elements that I think Star Trek needs.
Yeah, yeah. I can see that. Okay.
Special guest?
Yeah. 2 is definitely my favorite. 5 is definitely my least favorite. Star Trek 1 depends on my mood. I just want to say it before I rank the rest. There are some days where it would definitely be my second favorite. Other days, it might be down around 5 level. Okay. If I'm just not in the movie for a long, ponderous kind of... But I'd say 2, 6, 4, 3, 1, 5 on a bad day.
Okay. I can see. They really do... Like, when I was younger, it used to be a lot more clear-cut for me. Like, if you had asked me this question, I was like... you know, maybe 20 years ago, I would have been like, oh, it's 2... You know, 2, 6, 4, like, but now it's like, I'm with Nick. Like, it's a little more shifting, and I'm like, oh, it can kind of depend on, you know, like, 5 isn't quite as bad as I remember it, but like, 3 is a little rockier than I remember it being, and like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, like, if it's a Sunday, it's snowing outside, and I got no place to go, I might enjoy Sundays. 1.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Just hang out, kick back, and watch. I'm like, yeah, it's all right, but.
You can just watch the entire cast staring at the screen like this.
There's a lot of that. Like there's a lot of people.
The most tense part of the entire movie is they almost get hit by an asteroid, then they blow it up with a photon torpedo, and that's it.
Yeah, and there's just people staring at things. Like it's like you're watching. It's very meta. You're watching people watching things.
But the production on it is phenomenal.
You're looking back at you through the lens.
The sets are breathtaking. The special effects are top-notch. Yeah. The music is gorgeous.
But 3, I have no reason to watch it ever again.
I like
3. It was funny. Jack and I went to see 3 and 4 at the Palace Theater here in Syracuse.
Oh, really?
And I was talking to him, and before the movie started, I said it kind of loudly. I'm like, you know, the only thing I really don't like about 4 is Robin Curtis. I just don't think her is savvy. And then the guy at stage goes,
she's right there.
The guy at stage goes, and tonight we have a special guest, Robin Curtis. And I'm like, oh.
Curtis is better as savvy because she plays. Because I'm really gonna nerd out. Because the Spock character's half human. Nimoy plays up.
Every 10 minutes.
Nimoy plays up the repressed emotion thing too much. And I think a lot of actors who play Vulcans in Star Trek try to do that to make their characters dynamic. Kirstie Alley is definitely trying to do that, even though her character is full Vulcan. Why would a full Vulcan have these deep emotional situations? Savick is like a real full-blooded, no emotion. Captain David is dead. You know, your son is dead, and that's all she says about it. Is she crying? No. I get the sense that if Kirstie Alley were in Star Trek 3, she would have went, you know, she would have had like a gasp. She would have been, David, is dead, even though she's a full Vulcan. So I think Robin Curtis plays the Vulcan more believably.
I just think it's funny.
She's a bad actress.
Well, I just think it's funny.
That's what it comes to.
Yeah, I gotta agree with that.
They had to just get her, like, how awkwardly they get her out of Star Trek
4. In 4, she has no purpose.
She's like, I'm staying here.
Gotta go. Like, it's just, it's really, like, kind of like.
In 4, she has no place. I'll give you that. And granted, yes, she's not as good an actress as Kirstie Alley in general. I just think she played Savick more like a Vulcan. Yeah. From a nerd standpoint, she played her more like a Vulcan.
Okay.
Where I think Kirstie Alley was trying for a little bit of repressed emotion, which a full-blood Vulcan would not have.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of sick of that because we've seen that with Spock, because that's Spock's gimmick.
Yeah. Well, I think it's pretty safe to say this is probably the only original series Star Trek movie we will have on this show, although
there are far worse.
The Next Generation ones are definitely
my least favorite Star Trek movie. Is every one of them.
Mine too.
Yeah.
It's like it's just a TV show.
I don't.
It's a TV show on
First Contact.
Extended.
Great.
First Contact is good. I wouldn't say it's great.
Not great. Compared to one of the other Next Generation movies.
The only one I liked was they had the Borg. So the Borg are kind
of. That was the one. Yeah.
Which one's that?
First Contact.
Is that First Contact?
Yeah.
It has time travel and
the one that followed it was. Actually, I think worse than 5.
Yeah, they get rough at that point. So maybe a
which
Next
one has
Generation.
Shatner in it?
That's Generation.
Generation.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Which is neither here nor there.
Yeah, yeah. For me, that one's like a take it or leave it. Sometimes I think it's great, and sometimes I'm like, eh. Depends on my mood.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like an episode with an extra, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a pretty, Generations is a pretty shameless attempt at being like, hey, audiences, do you like Captain Kirk? Do you like The Next Generation? Do you like either one? Do you like them both? Whatever. Come see this movie.
Yeah.
It's another example of Star Trek getting far better actors for crappy roles than they should, though, with
Malcolm McDowell.
Oh,
Malcolm
McDowell. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, originally for Star Trek V, they wanted to get Sean Connery for Cybok.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see that? Spock, it's good to see you.
Spock,
I need your starship to get to the
shuttle. I was reading, I don't know if it's true or not, that the planet, is called Shakari, based on Sean Connery.
Shakari.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Interesting.
You learned a lesson from David Warner. Just say no.
Yeah, just get out.
When Shatner comes knocking.
Yeah.
Say no.
David Warner got his win, though. He got to play the Klingon in Star Trek VI.
Yeah.
I gotta watch that one now.
Yeah, we'll lend it to you.
A much better film, Christopher Plummer.
Yeah. Mm. All right. Well, that as always, you can find Stop the Movie on Facebook. We post hilarious episode recaps and pictures from each film on our website. And there are actually 4 of the 5 people sitting at this table are on Twitter.
I'm actually going to start an Andy Wolf parody account.
We should. Yeah.
It's just going to be.
Can you do that without my permission?
Believe. Clearly, you've never been on Twitter because 80% of Twitter are parody accounts.
Did anyone catch the homoerotic subtext of The Dark Knight Rises?
Yeah.
Better. Just anytime anyone on Twitter says something about a scene in a movie, I missed that.
The Russian meteor has a Twitter account.
Yes,
several. Yeah.
Women in refrigerators.
Yeah. So, to follow us, Jack is on Twitter.
At Jack Estabrook, yep.
Cody.
At Cody A. Wolf.
At Nick Newt.
And at Wind Up Films, all over the Twitterverse with those. Maybe someday Andy will be on there as well. We'll see.
We'll see. Maybe. I'm intrigued now.
We'll see. Well, because I think it's safe to say that we all believe the internet to be a fad. I mean, I think we all believe that, you know, and I think we also all believe social media to be a fad.
I've called a number of these things as fads, as you know.
So. Oh, yeah. And you may yet be proven right.
Cell phones will not catch on.
Yeah. No. The jury's still out on a lot of these things.
That's right.
So, yeah, well, time will tell, and maybe we'll see where it goes. And that is it. We'll be back very soon for another episode of Stop the Movie. More bad movies to come. More unintentional comedy to come. We'll see everyone back here next time. Bye.
Peace be with you.